Blog Talk Radio.
Music went away.
From the Boomer and the Babe studio at the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's time for Success or Failure with Tom and Terry. Success or Failure is the show that gives you methods and principles to guide you to your best business and your best self. Now here are Tom Legering and Terry Munther.
Hello and welcome. Hello, I'll start that again. I'm sorry. Hello and welcome to Success or Failure with Tom and Terry. I'm Dr. Terry Munther, along with author and entrepreneur Tom Legering, and each month we get together on this program to discuss and share ideas for meeting personal and financial goals and improving the quality of our lives. We'll talk about the tried and true concepts found in the book Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours, and we'll hear from business partners and guests about their projects, their success stories, and how they're finding their path to a happy, healthy, and successful life. We hope you'll join in the conversation by calling or emailing us with your thoughts and comments at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe or www.successorfailure.org. We're very happy today to welcome as our guest Laura Horsley, Executive Director of Eve's Place. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Terry. How are you?
We're great. And Tom, we're back together again. Good morning, Tom.
Good to have you back in state.
In state. For those of you that may have been listening to some previous shows, we're broadcasting today from Youngtown, Arizona, just outside of Sun City, just outside of Phoenix, Arizona. But I also have family and a home in Washington State and have been up there for the last 2 or 3 months. And so we're able, through the wonders of technology, to keep the show going while I'm broadcasting from Washington and Tom's broadcasting from Arizona. But here we are together again in beautiful Youngtown. Good to be sitting at the same desk again, Tom.
Absolutely. It's good to have you back. Weather's great here.
We shouldn't say that. Depending on where you are in the country, today here in the Phoenix area, it's about 70 degrees and sunny. So sorry for those of you that are not experiencing that. Anyway, we're happy to welcome Laura. Tom, I'd like you've been working a lot with Laura. I have in the past. Would like you to introduce her, and then hopefully she can chime in, and we'll just have a conversation. So, Tom.
Yes, it's great to have you here today, Laura. The interesting thing is when you had your meeting with your volunteers and your donors that were helping your business grow, the nonprofit Eve's Place. And before I met you, I had several interactions with it, and everybody has just excellent comments about it. What we'd like you to do is just kind of give us some of those same comments that you mentioned to your volunteers, and how in such a short time you've managed to grow this organization to help so many people.
And also, for those that aren't in this area, Eve's Place is very well known in the Sun City, Youngtown, Northwest Valley area. But for those of us that aren't, if you just give a quick background on Eve's Place, what it is, the mission, etc.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for such a wonderful introduction and the opportunity to chat with you today. Eve's Place is a program that provides emergency shelter services for victims of domestic violence and their children. We will be 7 years old in April, and so we're pretty excited about that. I've been with Eve's Place myself as the executive director for the last 5 years. I'm getting ready to have my 5th anniversary with them soon. We started off as a grassroots volunteer-run organization. It was a bunch of women with a church that said, there should be a place for women to go closer to home in the Northwest Valley. At that time, about 7 or 8 years ago, they were having to go all the way to Goodyear or all the way to Phoenix to go to shelter, and it was very difficult for folks here in the upper northwest part of the valley. And so they got together, and they had a bunch of focus groups in the community. They pulled together some supportive women, and they formed a board, and off they went. They had a plan. They had a goal, and certainly had the means to move forward. And when I joined them, they were about 2.5 years old and had actually opened their first thrift store, had grown into a bigger program. They were at that time had 12 beds, still volunteer-run. There was only one part-time paid employee, and so I was their second paid employee, and so the honor was mine, of course, to join them. We were able to, in a short period of time, get some state funding through the Department of Economic Security here in Arizona, and it changed how we did things completely. We were able to hire a full set of staff. We were able to do training. We were able to increase our beds from 12 to 38 in less than 7 months. Mm-hmm. And so we had some amazing and very quick growth at the very beginning. And then we kind of trucked along at that stage for quite a while. Now, 2 years ago, when the economy started to have a little bit of a struggle, we lost $200,000 in the course of a year. And so we had to take a look. And some of the things that I've learned from looking at Tom's workbook is that you have to constantly reevaluate your goals and you have to reevaluate what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And our board is an amazing group of individuals. I can't say enough about how fabulous these seven people are at this point in time. They are not afraid to work. They're not afraid to take risks. They're not afraid to reevaluate and look at changing us. We've changed considerably every year since I came. And so we're constantly looking at new ways to provide service, better and innovative practices. And so we took a little bit of a step back. And so now we're operating 30 beds here in the Northwest Valley. And we're really kind of doing a really avant-garde type of program. We are completely different than most programs. We don't have a huge facility. We don't have locked iron gates and security cameras and people. We are kind of commingled within an apartment complex. And so it's a little bit different way of doing things, but it's working better for our residents. And our philosophy has always been about providing a home. Mm-hmm. They leave home. They leave home with everything that was familiar and comfortable to them. Many of them walk in our front door with nothing but the clothes on their back and maybe a few minor belongings. We want them to leave home and come home and then hopefully find their new home. And so it's always about that sense of being where you belong. Mm-hmm.
Safety, security, and a feeling of belonging.
Yes.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. So our staff, you know, are real good about telling people, welcome home, we've been waiting for you. You know, we want them to feel comfortable. The apartment complex has been really great. We have 6 residential units, each one maxed at 5 people per unit. So there's no more sharing with tons of people. They're 2-bedroom, 2-bath units, so everybody's kind of got their own little space and actually have the ability to have some privacy. We've actually had 2 or 3 families that were big enough to have their own apartment, so they were able to really rebond and restructure themselves. And so it's been a good thing for us. We provide on-site support groups, and that's one of the ways that I got involved with Tom and Terry. And we try to bring in folks that can teach our residents new and different ways of doing things in their life, whether it's setting up goals for success or learning about how to plan for their safety or learning how to access community resources or how to do better parenting styles. We have pet therapy coming in so that kids can have that close contact with pets. So we try to really create a diverse group of support groups so that they learn different ways of doing things. We're really excited in the near future we're going to be adding AA groups on site. And so we'll be able to now, you know, I think, hopefully, create that entire spectrum from let's learn how to plan for safety, the basic need that everybody comes in wanting to achieve, to once we get done, you know, let's address all of the things that have created difficulties for ourselves. And so hopefully we'll continue to move along and do some of that.
Talk more, before we get into more of the services end of it, I'm also more curious about now your funding. I know you have East Place, the thrift store,
yes,
correct?
Yes, correct.
Tell me about how East Place currently being funded now. You said you took a hit with the economy, as most did. And then I also about the board, how they're made up or elected or...
Okay. Let's talk about the board first.
Okay.
We have two original members from the very beginning that have stuck it out throughout the entire process with us. We actively recruit members. So right now we're looking for certain types of individuals, people with banking experience, people who know people of influence, people who have access to monetary resources. You know, we kind of look at where we're weak in our board makeup, and then we actively go out and seek those individuals to mm-hmm. fill those spots. Right now, currently, we are in the process of trying to recruit new members. So we have an application process. We have a board development committee. And then they meet with each prospect, and they kind of go through what the requirements are, and they see if it's a good fit or not. And then we invite them to a meeting. They sit through a meeting, and then at that point in time, they decide if they want to go forward, and then the board nominates and then approves each person.
And so if someone was interested and is listening to this that may be interested in serving on your board, how would they contact you?
They would contact our office, and okay. they would request a board member application.
Okay.
So... and then you wanted to know, what was the other thing? I'm sorry.
How are you funded?
Funded, yes. We still get predominantly state dollars. The Department of Economic Security is still our primary funder. About 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, we were fortunate enough to get a contract with the Department of Public Safety using VOCA funds, Victims of Crime Act money. So they're federal dollars passed through to the State Department of Public Safety, and then they then do proposals, and we all, you know, compete and turn in proposals and provide services based on their criteria. So we have a little bit of funding from them, about 8% of our budget. We actually now have two thrift stores, one in Sun City at 107th and Peoria Avenues, and then we just opened one about 2.5-3 years ago at 35th and Northern in Phoenix. Mm. When the market started to spiral downward, we realized we needed to diversify our funding. We were very, very heavily reliant on state dollars, and so took the risk to now open a second store to try to generate additional revenue.
Good. So, and that's been more stable, or the additional revenue from the thrift stores, more stable than federal or state funding?
Well, right now, I think we've kind of hit, a plateau, at least I hope so. Our federal funding has been pretty level, and we just found out we're being renewed for next year, so we know we can count on those funds. We're not quite sure where we're going to fall with the state funding yet. Our thrift stores are plugging along and providing about the same level of income each year. So,
okay.
You mentioned that people could, if they were interested in serving on your board and they had some special skills that they think and you think might benefit Eve's Place, that they could call your office. What would be the phone number, or do they email, or what's the best way for them to contact you?
The best way to do it is to call, and that number is 623-547-6175.
Okay. And if a person was just interested in maybe donating either products to the thrift stores or cash or doing anything on those lines, what would be the procedure?
We can take cash donations in multiple ways. You can go to our website, www.safetyatevesplace.org. You can donate directly on our website. You can mail it in to our address. You can go into our office, which is co-located in our Sun City thrift store. You can call somebody and ask them to, you know, come and pick it up even. So we've been pretty flexible about how we'll collect donations of money. As far as things, either one of our stores can take donations. And if you have large items or you have lots of something in particular, you can actually call the store and ask and schedule a pickup for them to come out and get it for you. And again, you can call the office and then they can give you the information and the phone numbers to do those things.
Good. Now, when I was working with your clients at Eve's Place, one of the issues, again, was continuing education for many, many of the women, that they were still looking to work toward a GED or a community college or a college degree so that they could get further training. And we were trying to assist in that manner. What have you got going in that area? And I've been away for a while, so... Tell us about how we're trying to get the women more training, more continuing education opportunities.
Okay. Well, we still have Tom coming and trying to help them with learning how to be successful. Some of the other things that we do is we partner. We partner with other organizations. Goodwill Career Centers is a good place for our folks to go and learn how to set up a basic resume, learning how to pick up some computer skills, and then doing some job searching. We also use Fresh Start for Women. There's a couple of other programs that we're just now beginning to have conversations with and form partnerships with. So we're hoping to spread out as much as possible in the employment relocating kind of process for them. It is certainly a huge need. Most of our folks that come to us are not employed at the time that they come or lose their jobs as a result of the abuse in their life. So it's real, it's real priority for them to find a way to react.
I mean, that was one of the things that I know when I was there on a weekly basis, it seemed, and there were new folks every week, it was the main question they had of me being, you know, former educator and working in school districts and colleges was, how do I even get going? I mean, how do I make contact with the community college to get my GED or with a college, or where do I go? What do I do? I mean, and that's a pretty, was a pretty common question. And it appeared to me that the best thing that we could do as volunteers was to try to make those contacts between those programs that were offering GED, you know, whether it be the local community colleges or universities, or high schools themselves sometimes are having those. And so I know that was part of my work when I went away, was trying to make those contacts, come back and say, okay, call this person at this number, I've spoken to them, and make but it was just a huge need for many, because they knew it, and Tom, you know, part of his presentation every week was, you're going to have to seek additional education and additional training to get where you want to go when you've decided what your goal is and you can envision that. Well, what's that take? And most answered, more education, more training.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that we try to do in our class, working with success or failure, and from the book, by actually having the people write down their goals and visualizing how they want their lives to be changed, is I get them out into the future and say, this is what I want to have, and then they're looking at, well, here's where I'm at now, how do I get there? And once you get your vision of how you want things in the future, and then I have them monetize it, and then we'll talk about that in the class. Well, the vision I have, I need this for my kids, and this I need, and then I want to have my own life put together. And we come to a dollar amount, and then you work backwards from the vision to where you are today. What skills do you have to have in order to have that type of a job? But I noticed that In some of the classes, the people are so mentally, it's not just the physical abuse, because I, you know, you don't see that. I mean, if they have bandages on or something, you see that, the physical part, but it's the mental part. And that I think is the hardest thing that we have to deal with when we're talking to the people, is to allow them to understand that they're really valuable human beings, and they have a right to be, and they have a right to good things in their life. And the fact that some predator has mentally pushed them down so far, that it's how do you move them up from that, and letting them understand. I teach them the common 10 two-letter words. If it is to be, it's up to me. And a lot of times they'll look at me just with kind of a shocked look. Nobody's mentioned that to them in the past. And when you really get involved with them, where they actually can start thinking and physically writing down the things that they want, because I make them write, if it is to be, it's up to me, and we start every class that way. And then I teach them the 11th two-letter word, which is no.
Right.
To recognize what got you into this problem. Recognize how the predator worked in your life in the past. You don't have to feel bad because you were a victim. You only have to feel bad if you allow that to go forward in your life. And what really surprised me, because I also teach it at another shelter too, but they only work with women. And in your shelter, it's quite a few men in there. And
right.
I mean, it's amazing. And I
and
think
children.
We're not dealing with the kids. I mean, they come to the class and then they go in their own separate room, so they're not in our class.
Right.
But the men in there, in fact, they were some of the hardest ones to get through to. The women pretty much understand what's going on. But I think the size of this problem and the fact that it's men and women, is kind of unknown to most people, you know. And what is it? It's one in four people or at some time in their life will be a victim of domestic violence?
Yes, one in four women. And one in 10 men, which we think that's probably kind of low. It's
yeah.
probably more than that in actuality.
Right, they're not going to, some men won't say it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
The stigma that goes with saying that you're a victim as a male is incredibly difficult.
Right.
So not only do you have the abuse and the overwhelmed feeling of starting over in a short period of time, these folks only get up to 4 months of stay with us. And so imagine having to restart your entire life in 4 months and starting at ground zero. It's not a lot of time when some of us are in our 20s and our 30s and our 50s and our 70s. The idea of coming into a shelter with no income, no reserves, no family support, no friends, and having to rebuild and start completely over in less than 4 months, they're in shell shock. It is very difficult for them to think beyond the right now, and the right now I am so overwhelmed, I can't do another thing.
Right.
And so add to that then the stigma of being a male and feeling demasculated and feeling all of those other things, it's incredibly difficult for them. And they tend to be a lot more, what's the word one of them used for me? A lot more of a pain because they're trying so hard to be still manly and tough
yeah.
and all of the things, and they don't really need anything, but yet knowing deep down that they really do need somebody
right.
just to help them out.
That's one of the hardest person that I worked with at the shelter, and I don't get that much time with them, just coming in one hour once a week. And the one gentleman was very upset with me when I talked about him having to take responsibility for it. And it isn't that you want to go back and look at it and say, okay, I'm responsible for being a victim. That's not the case. That's not what Eve's Place teaches. That's not what I teach. But if you allow that to happen to you again, then you have to take responsibility and say, that was on me because I didn't learn the two-letter word, which is no. And so what I try to teach them is that it's like a lion, when he's out, he doesn't look for the toughest person. He looks for a victim. I've done ride-alongs with police where they go out and show, they actually put people out, bait people.
Right.
A man dressed like a woman, a little old lady practically with a walker. And guess what? She was usually the victim.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody, a police officer with a regular civilian clothes just walking down the street, the muggers would leave them alone. And so there's a victim mentality, and the predators know how to do that. They have a plan, and they do that over and over again as long as the victim allows it. And so once you get into the place where you recognize what happened in the past, what led you to this place to allow this other human to take away your self-worth, and that's really where these people wind up. Like you say, they got 4 months to get their self-worth back and feel that they can go. What I tell them is you're going from a victim. That's in the past. When you're in the shelter, you're a survivor. And the goal is to be a thriver. So that's what I try to teach them, that it's up to them. If it is to be, it's up to me. And then you try to give them some legs that will follow along with that kind of thinking. But it's just really amazing to me that how once the light bulb goes on, I mean, you can see it. I see people sitting in the class. They'll sit there with their arms folded and look down like, what's this jerk going to say next? And you just keep talking to them. And if you can make eye contact, eventually you can start getting through to them. And it's really heartwarming to see the work that you're doing. Because, I mean, my little slice of coming in for minutes practically is nothing, but to actually see people and then see that actually they start getting it, that it's up to them. And this doesn't work for just victims. This works for all people. See,
what I see when I go to Eve's Place, Laura, that you're doing for people, and it reminds me a lot of when I was working with at-risk kids in my career, you're providing them a family.
Right.
Which they've been ripped out of one way or the other. And that means belonging, that means support, and that means recognition.
Right.
Okay. Belonging, that I belong to something, support for what I need so that I can move forward, and recognition that I'm a worthwhile human being. And that's what families do, right? All of those things. Interesting lesson, and I know this is your show, but it just, there's just parallels to me. When I first started 100 years ago as a school administrator, one of my first jobs was working in, as a principal. That was my first job as a principal at a high school for at-risk youth. Most of them had come straight out of detention or off of the streets. We had babies. We had a lot of pregnant girls, et cetera, et cetera. You know the story there. And so I had come from the regular mainstream education, and, of course, I wanted everybody to be smart and go on to college and was enforcing the rules as such. And I remember it was not very long that I was principal there, and I was disciplining one of the young men, and I said, why can't you just go to class and do what the teacher tells you, blah, 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 right? Your normal story you would have. And he looked at me very sincerely, and he says, man, I got to work with my probation officer today because they're going to send me back to jail. My girlfriend and baby, I don't know how I'm going to feed them tonight, and I don't know where we're staying. And you're telling me that I ought to learn Shakespeare? Come on, man. Stop me in my tracks. Well, where we went from there, which was really groundbreaking at the time, and in fact, I shared this with a person I was golfing with at Tom's, who is now a vice principal of an at-risk youth high school, and I said, let me tell you the story, because he was talking about the kids he was serving. And I said, so here's what we did. They couldn't learn, and they weren't really interested until we could take care of their basic needs.
Right.
And so we only had so many people. It was a small little place. I think there was only 100 or 120 kids in the whole high school. So we didn't have a whole lot of staff. So we used all of the teachers, the administrators, the secretaries, the custodians, any maintenance people that were on the building, and we assigned them a family. And the families were only 6 or 7. I think 8 was the most that we would allow in a family. And so the custodians and maintenance people, who usually didn't get to work in a meaningful way with kids, that's a poor thing to say, they're very meaningful to kids, but you know, in a teaching way almost, before we started school every day, and we started school about 10 or 11 o'clock, because they weren't going to get there any earlier, right?
Right.
We, in a regular high school, it would have been called homeroom. We called it family. So that 7 kids met with their parent or whatever they were called, just the head of the family is what we call them. And they went around and seated in a circle. What do you need today? Well, I got to come up with a place to stay tonight. And they would write that down, or among the group try to figure out where they could stay that night. My baby needs to see the doctor. Okay. Well, the custodian couldn't do that. But what they did is then we met as a staff right afterwards. John needs to get his daughter to a doctor. Betty needs a place to stay tonight. Call the PO for Jim because they're going to put him back in jail. We want to talk to him first. And then we all had separate duties to give them that support. Yeah, we got state awards. We got and it was a very simple concept of, before I put that person in an English class, I better make sure that they have something to eat and a place to stay and that their basic needs are taken care of. Longer story than I was going to make it. When I went to your place, Eve's place, that was the feeling I got, that those people had come from everywhere.
Right.
And they were just saying, I mean, Tom and I were sitting there trying to tell them how to move forward in their career, and I was telling them they needed more education. And a couple of times, a couple of the women just said, I don't even know what I'm doing tomorrow.
Right.
Right, which is part of our job, was to tell them, well, let's plan for what you're doing tomorrow.
Right.
And let's talk about what you need to do to have a better day tomorrow, you know, and what you can control and what you can't, et cetera, et cetera. But talk to me. Is that what you're seeing? And I guess, how are you dealing with those sorts of things? And I'll turn it back to you after that ramble.
That's okay.
That was excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for sharing the story. What a wonderful thing that you saw in those individuals. And that is essentially what we try to do, is meet them where they come from. We don't try to tell them what they need to do. It's not my life. It's not the advocate's life. It's theirs. We try to sit with them and determine what are the goals you want to achieve while you're here? What are your short-term need goals? And so those are the things that we write down first. What are your long-term goals? What do you want to do once you finish here? And we write those down. And we give them an opportunity to meet with their advocate as often as they like. And the idea is to talk about what are your barriers? What are the things that are working well for you? What are the things that you're just really stuck? You just don't know what to do next. And then we try to brainstorm with them. But keeping them actively engaged and actively involved in trying to determine what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What do I have to bring to the process of my life, and what do I still need to get? And so the idea is then to help them connect with community resources that can go beyond the short-term stay that we provide. So we try to, in addition to helping them set up those initial goals, to help them reconnect in the community with longer-term programs like Fresh Start for Women, like Goodwill Career Centers, and some of the other agencies in the area, that they can continue so that they build that support network. If you don't have a family, if you don't have that support team that works for you, you're kind of an island. And there's something very basic about needing that human support that comes from family, that comes from having friends and associations. And that's one of the key things that we try to do, is to really reconnect them to some of those people that they've lost. Many of them couldn't go home to their families. Many of them have lost touch with their families. And again, we don't tell them that you have to do any of those things, but we're here for you. We'll listen. So at 2 o'clock in the morning when Sally can't sleep, she comes in the office and the advocate sits and they talk about what's happening for Sally. Some of them are not ready to think about having a career and having a life. They're not even sure they're going to wake up tomorrow. And so it really is starting from ground zero and starting wherever they come from. Some of them come in very motivated. All they want is a short-term stay. I just need a place to be so that I can move forward. And they do it all on their own. And some of them really need some of that time and attention because they're so lacking in some of that support.
How much of the issues that you have, and I know that they have, and how are you dealing with it in regard, are a result of drug or alcohol problems?
You know, we get a little bit of, we experience a little bit of that, but that isn't really the primary thing for us. A lot of the folks that do have substance abuse issues, it was a form of self-medicating to get through what was happening at home. Our philosophy is make a person safe first, and then you can kind of talk about and you can deal with anything that goes in the periphery of that person. So basic needs, a place to sleep, a place to shower, food to eat, somebody to listen to me when I'm crying, somebody to offer me support, and somebody to cheer for me when I've made a success, no matter how small or how large that is. Those are the basics. And then you can kind of watch them kind of blossom and figure out their own stuff as they go.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm getting in the class when I sit with people. The difference in the economic strata, you know, it's not one group. It's not one nationality. It's people. It's people that are here. And a lot of times when they've been in abusive, like I did talk to one lady who was 15 years in an abusive relationship, and we were able to let her talk about that and how she could overcome how down she was, you know, and to say that's okay to, it's okay to be where you're at.
Right.
It's just not okay to stay there. You know, and how do you give them actually hope and feeling that it's okay that they have worth? And they'll say, nobody's ever told me that before.
Right.
You know, and it's, you know, that's just the life that they've lived ever since they were little people. And then they go into adulthood and they get caught up in this kind of thing and they think that's how life is. And,
you know, as a person that hasn't been in that situation, one thing I'm curious about is when they leave, it would appear to me they would be very frightened still, not just about what they're going to do, but potentially what their abuser is going to do once they're out of that safe environment.
Right. Well, then you understand an awful lot. People don't realize that once a person leaves, whether they be a male or a female, once that person leaves, the chance of severe injury or death rises by 74%. So I hear it all day long, every day. Why don't they just leave? you know, they can just go. It's their choice. They stay because whatever. They stay because sometimes it's safer to stay than it is to leave. If you look at the homicides that happen in Arizona every year as a result of domestic violence, and we post at least 100 names every year to the list, you'll see that the majority of the people on that list are ex-wife, ex-girlfriend, former this, former that. It is when the relationship ends and that person cannot control that person again. Domestic violence is a crime based on power and control, not substance abuse, not anger management issues. It's based on power and control. When a person exits that relationship, they have now deprived that person of power and control, the basic that, you know, the basic thing that actually ruled that relationship. They will go to more extreme measures to get that person back or to find that person. And so that's one of the reasons why shelters are so important and why we have to maintain confidential addresses, is because we have to be able to allow that person to flee somewhere that that abusive person may not be able to find them. Because 74%, that's a lot to think about how dangerous that could be. And most deaths occur after the person leaves, not during the course of the relationship. So some of these folks aren't necessarily choosing the life of being a victim or choosing the life of being a martyr or giving in to somebody. They're choosing the life of staying alive. I've had women tell me, at least if I was home, I knew what time he was coming home and I could tell what kind of mood he was in and I could tell what he was going to do when he got home. When I walked out the door, I never knew what corner he was going to be around. I never knew what building he was going to be waiting for me at. I never knew when he was going to show up at my family's house. And so it really does, it is really about safety, and it really is about, it is a dangerous process for these folks to leave.
So what sort of steps can be taken? I mean, I'm assuming law enforcement gets involved to some degree.
At times, yes. About a third of them.
Scary.
Yeah.
It just seems that would be scary.
Yeah, it's very scary for them, and that's why we keep the locations confidential. We have basic security rules and things that we require, as do all shelters. Many of them do have the guarded gates and the things, you know, and that is all because of that, keeping that those people outside the
right.
the boundary.
One of the things that I do, I tell the people in the class that I don't use anybody's name, so
right.
I don't talk to you as Laura. I talk to you as a person. And that's because I say, you can email me, but all I want you to do is put a name, the first name or some initials or anything like that. If you use initials, that'll be perfect. And then there's no way that anybody can get back through me, you know, to find out about that. It's their privacy is tremendously important.
That's paramount, yeah.
Yeah. Just for what Laura's saying, I did not realize those numbers were that high.
Yeah, it's unbelievably scary.
Yeah. But I see what you're saying, that the predator lost his power and control and wants to get it back.
Certainly.
And then they go too far. So, I mean, they go too far just being who they are. But that's just an amazing situation.
So let me give you the time for your commercial.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is somewhat of a forum for you. So obviously we all are sitting here at the table saying this is very important work you're doing. That being said, you obviously need funding.
Right.
You need board members. You need assistance. So this would be the question. What do you need and how can people help you?
Just donations. Donations of household items, clothing, toiletries, any of those, anything that you have in your house. We need times six because we have six apartments. So pots and pans, towels, anything that you have laying around your house that's not being used or that you can do away with, bring it to Eve's Treasures and drop it off. And then that way we can either get it to the apartments, we can get it to the people moving into their own homes, or we can sell it and we can make the dollars necessary to support the Safe House program. Another way to get involved is to volunteer. We're always in need of volunteers at our stores to help process all the donations that come in. Another way to do it is to connect with our administrative staff and help us put on fundraising events. It's very difficult to count on any funds outside of what we can make ourselves, so fundraising events are incredibly important. We make probably about 11% of our money just in fundraising events, doing fashion shows, doing golf tournaments, all kinds of things. And so any kind of fundraising idea We'd love to hear about them. Check out our website. Make donations in the name of somebody else. If you have experience in the domestic violence field, come and be a volunteer at our Safe House program. We're actually right now looking at training some volunteer advocates. So people can actually come in and work with the folks with another advocate, and so learning how to be that support person for them. And again, you can do all of that stuff by calling 623-547-6175 or logging on at www.safetyateavesplace.org.
And how can our legislators and law enforcement assist?
They can hold offenders accountable. Our society has gotten much better at not blaming the victims for what's happened in these relationships, but I think we could still use a little bit of a push to really move that accountability structure back to the person who is perpetrating the crime, and that is the person who is abusing somebody else. And so I would like to see our legal system really push for accountability for these folks. I'd like to see us actually put offenders in a place called jail where they're away from society and having to leave their comfort zone rather than women and children and some men and children leaving their environment to start over in a strange place with a lot of strangers.
Right.
And state and federal funding comes, again, from where? And that would be another avenue, is that we contact our legislators, both state and federal, to make sure that that funding is sustained or increased.
Correct. Making sure that they understand how important it is for victims to have a safe place to be and to have that opportunity to connect with community resources and have that support.
Excellent. The other thing is that anybody can contribute $20 to purchase the book. All they have to do is send $20 to Eve's Place to purchase the book, and $10 stays with Eve's Place. The book goes to the victims. And what we found is that the people will actually take, you know, I'm just making up a lot of times just four chapters just on a copy machine, and people will take that away, and I get emails from people that are in different states. I get, you know, somebody contacting me from Colorado or Iowa or wherever, and they say, I've got this part in the book, and, you know, this is how I'm dealing with it. What, you know, and they'll ask a question about something that they've come to. But the physical writing in the book, because it's just a workbook, and they write in it as theirs, it actually triggers things in their subconscious, so they see opportunities that they wouldn't have seen before. So contributing, if you don't have any other way to contribute, just send $20 to Eve's Place and say, success or failure, help out the victims.
Yeah, I agree. We're kind of winding down or wrapping up on this segment. Laura, anything else you'd like to add for today? Or
I just wanted to say thank you both, Tom and Terry, for taking the risk and joining us at Eve's Place and helping our residents formulate a new future for themselves, and certainly instrumental in doing that. And thank you for the opportunity to share some of our work with the public.
It seems like the actual classes that we've been having have been helping people get jobs.
Yes.
Did you have some number you mentioned at your meeting?
I did. We went from having less than 10% of our folks employed to almost 70% of them.
Wow.
So you guys are making a difference.
And it's because of what you're doing and bringing the people to a place where they can actually stop and start thinking about themselves, so that they know that it's up to me. But they can't do that if they weren't in the situation that you've allowed them to be in.
Right,
and
that's a wonderful
I really
approach.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And thank you. It's a great partnership all the way around.
Excellent.
It is. You know, the lesson, we're talking about Eve's Place, but it reminds me still of the lessons that we all can take away no matter where we're at in life, or business people even, Tom, is, again, what Eve's Place is offering is that safety first. But then beyond that, that sense of belonging, that sense of support to move forward, and that sense of recognition that I said all are a part of a family, you know. And if we all think of that, whether it's in our family, our relationships, or running our businesses. What are people coming to businesses for? It's the same thing. They want a sense of belonging. They want to be supported, and they want to be recognized. You know, why does Safeway always say my name when I come through the aisle? Thank you, Mr. Munter, right? It's because they want me to say, this is my store. I belong here, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what you're offering. That's what we all should think about as we're running families or businesses. That's what people are looking for.
Yes.
They're looking for that sense of belonging and that sense of recognition. And I want to thank you for offering that for men and women who don't have that and getting them started forward. So thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tom, anything else?
I just want to concur with what you just said. It's so rewarding to actually be able to work with people individually so that they can figure out. And one of the questions that's always asked is, people say, well, I ask them, what do you want to do? And they say, well, I just want to help people. And so I say, take a mirror and look in the mirror, and you'll see that person. And you start out with that person. And one of the things that you need to think about is, once you've got your help and you get yourself on your way to the success and having living your life well, which you learn from the book, the thing is, then you know that you can have a place to give back. So once you get yourself together, then you can actually give stuff back, and East Place is a great place to start.
It really is. Laura, thank you. Tom, good seeing you again in the
glad
same locale.
Here.
Yeah, and we'll see you down at your place of business soon. With that, we want to thank you all for joining us on Success or Failure with Tom and Terry. We hope you'll join us next month. We are live at 9 a.m. on the last Wednesday of the month, or you can hear us anytime at www.blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. In the meantime, feel free to comment and join us in the discussion by emailing us at successorfailure.org. Once again, this is Dr. Terry Munter and Tom Legering reminding you that success or failure, the choice is yours.
Excellent.
You've been listening to Success or Failure with Tom Legering and Terry Munter. Success or Failure is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.